Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
Hello and welcome to the Secret Vibe Lounge. You're listening to your host, Valerie A. Campbell. And this is the lounge where you get to turn your vibe on. Vibe is an acronym for vision, intention, belief, and expectation. And it's also short for the word vibration, your energy in motion. I always like to ask this question. Ask yourself, what do I want? And the reason for that is because I want you to focus on what you want in your life, because if you're in a mode of complaint, that is exactly what you will attract. Now, today I have got an amazing lady on this call. Okay, she's sitting in our lounge. You know, she's given us the benefit of her wisdom today. And we're going to be speaking in an area which is very important. Her name is Paulette Grant. And Pauline is 62, and she's a part-time supply teacher. even more, a part-time personal trainer. She's a mother, she's a grandmother, and more recently, a carer to her 92-year-old mother who is living with cancer. She's an advocate for change and is not scared of reinventing herself. She survived many challenges in her life, including child abuse, teenage pregnancy, and repeated abusive relationships. And she hopes that by telling her story, she'll be able to encourage others to tell theirs and put them on a path where they can overcome the power that they perceive that their abusers have. Her hobbies are working out, listening to music, eating cake. Doesn't really go hand in hand with the work, right? But there you go. Reading and lifelong learning. Yes, I hear that. That's me. Paulette was a mature student when she obtained her teaching degree. She has undertaken a variety of teaching posts and is now adding another string to her career bow by speaking out against domestic abuse. Writing about her experiences was a means of seizing the reruns of them in her head. I imagine it was a cathartic experience. She always felt that there was a bigger reason for her life experiences. She was then prompted to do something with it, and she has expressed it via her writing, and that is how her book Exposed and Unashamed came about. As a survivor of child and domestic abuse, her view is this: I am not a psychologist, a counselor, a life coach, a psychiatrist, or an academic. I am a survivor. I love that. I like to say I am a victor. I'm not a victim, I'm a victor. So when I heard Paulette's story, and you guys, you know me, except for the newcomers to the lounge, I'm quite open with my story. I heard my story being reflected back at me, and I thought, you know what, Paulette, we need to get you on a show and we need to open up this topic more, because we know that this can bring about healing to people who are in this situation, who are out of this situation, to relatives and friends, and help them on how to support people that are on this journey. So Paulette, that has been a very long introduction, but it is well deserved. Thank you so much for being in the lounge. Thank you. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Valerie, for inviting me.
So Paulette, your new book, Unashamed and Exposed, is that correct? Did I say it?
Oh, exposed and Unashamed.
Okay, I said it back to front. Could you tell me what made you write your book?
Well, really, it was a way of actually dealing with all the things that were still in my head, because although I'd worked I'd talked about them. I'd gone through counselling. There were still things that were there that I was questioning myself about. And so I decided to just write them down as a way of just getting them out of my head. And I surprised myself at how much I was actually able to write.
Right. So were you intentional about writing a book, or was it a case of, I'm going to write this just to get it out of my head? And then you thought, I'm going to write a book about this.
Right. Actually, yes. First of all, it was, as I said, just writing. And then with support from others, I was encouraged to actually put it all together and make it into a book.
Right. Okay. So tell me, I mean, you describe yourself as a survivor. Having gone through that experience, what are your views, your personal views about children and domestic abuse?
Well, I personally think that children are also victims of domestic abuse because they're living it alongside the abuser and the person that's being abused, because there is no way that you aren't living it, because you hear it all. You see some things, the fear that you live with, that when it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's just really, really intense. And I don't believe that you can be in that environment and not actually live it alongside the adults that are creating that environment for you. Mm. I also think that they are actually at risk, because instead of having the nurturing, loving home environment that they should have, they're in that toxic environment, which just leaves them open to all sorts of risks from outside influences.
Mm. So, Paulette, could you tell us a bit about your story and how you experienced abuse yourself?
Right. Well, my first experience was child abuse, actually. And that first experience was when I was at the age, I was 4 years old. Of course, I didn't realise what it was, but at the time, but I used to actually have flashbacks about it, and that has carried on. For the majority of my life. And I already felt that although I was living with my parents, it wasn't something that I took to either of them. Even as I got older and I realized that, yes, what happened to me shouldn't have happened to me, I didn't talk to my parents about it, because the environment I was living in wasn't conducive to opening up and mm-hmm. talking.
Yes.
It was more, I had to just be really careful and protect myself. I think that's really how it started. And then my father and I did not have a very positive relationship at all. My father was a man that you needed to be wary of, had a terrible temper. And a lot of that negativity and anger was directed at me. His words were all negative, blaming me for things that were wrong in his life. So you can imagine what that did to my self-esteem.
Do you have siblings?
I do, yes. I have two sisters, one older and one younger.
Right, okay. And how old would you say that you were when the abuse started? And I mean, honestly, if you don't feel like answering these questions, if you're not comfortable, please tell me. And was it a member of the family, the immediate family that you were used by?
Well, I actually had, so initially that first abuse wasn't a family member. We were living in rented accommodation, and it was just a young boy. Mm. I sort of imagine he was a teenager.
Right.
And as I said, we were living in rented accommodation, and I was in a room by myself, and this boy was there, and that's how it started.
Right, and what
luck were you? I was four. When I think back to where I was, obviously having spoken to my mum just about life in general and how things were when we were children.
Yes.
That I actually worked it out that at that time and where it took place, that's how old I must have been.
Right, okay. And was it a case of just inappropriate touching, or was it more than that?
Well, the thing that stood out to me was this young man with his penis out,
mm-hmm.
and then saying to me, "Don't tell anybody."
Right, and that's what you recollect from
that. Yes, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also, my recollection of it is what I was wearing and the sunshine, because it was actually, the sun was streaming through the window. So those are my recollections of that that experience.
Right, okay. And what were your other experiences of domestic abuse?
Well, the domestic abuse was constant because of, as I said, my father was a man to be feared and he ruled the roost. So
yes,
at home, it was always a situation where you had to be very careful about what you said, what you did, in case he lost his temper.
Mm-hmm.
And with my mum, she was always very careful about what she did, what she said.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't really go anywhere because he was very much, you don't do anything spontaneously. It always has to be planned.
Mm.
And he'd sort of isolated her in that she didn't really have any, in fact, she didn't have any friends.
Yes.
She started work later on in life. And so it was just a question of him being in charge. Yes. They argued a lot on what would generally happen at the end of an argument. She would say something, and I know I'd be thinking, don't say anything.
Yes.
You can see he's getting angry.
Yes.
You know what's coming next. But it's like she was bold, and she'd carry on responding, and then eventually she would say something that would hit the nail right on the head. And mm-hmm. at that point, he would just erupt and then rush at her, either with his bare hands, or maybe he'd pick something up and then he'd strike her with it.
Wow. And that must have been so traumatic as a child, witnessing that. And, you know, I can relate to it so much. I mean, I'm of West Indian parentage. And the way you describe your dad is like how my dad was, very controlling. My mum wasn't as feisty as your mum, it seems. You know, my dad was 20 years older than my mum. And I remember it was literally a case of you were seen and not heard. That's how we were grown up. You didn't express your feelings. Like, what was that? How dare you have right to feelings, much less even express it? And I remember when my dad used to come in from work, I used to feel like I wanted to disappear into the walls and just be invisible. So actually growing up, I would wear baggy trousers because my father was the perpetrator in my case. And I would wear baggy clothes so that he couldn't see my figure developing. And mine started at 11 years of age. But my dad was not just only physically abusive, he was also verbally abusive. I remember he would say things like, you know, when you get older, your husband's going to bring you home and say, hey, take your nasty bitch. You know, like, now it's just like inconceivable how a father can speak to a child like that, because that is clearly not love. And growing up in that environment, you become, how can I say, conditioned to that way of life. So when I became a young adult, I didn't know what love looked like because my dad had set the standard. And so I therefore then attracted someone, funny enough, born Gemini, just like my dad, beard, just like my dad. same attitude like my dad, because that's what you do and you don't realize
that's right
what is familiar to you.
Yeah.
So was that a similar experience for yourself?
Yes. I mean, I would say that yes, that feeling of love just wasn't there. I mean, I knew that my mum loved us because she did all the practical things for us. You know, we could go to her, but the hugs and the kisses that you need as a child to make you actually feel love, that wasn't there.
Yes.
So it was when I went to secondary school and you get, you know, boys are on the agenda, you're a normal teenager. And that was where I met, well, not at when I was that age, that was where I met my now ex-husband.
Yes.
And I felt that I was a lamb to the slaughter because I've never had a member of the opposite sex say anything nice to me, you know, say that I was pretty, showed that they cared about me. And so I was overwhelmed by it all.
Yes, yes.
Totally. You know,
what you're accustomed to.
Yeah, because I wasn't used to that. And one of the things that I feel that because of my initial experience of sexual abuse, where I was told to keep quiet, that even when things were developing with my ex-husband, and there were things happening that I certainly wasn't in control of, and I didn't want, I couldn't say anything about it. I didn't have the strength to actually say. In my head, I was saying no, but I didn't have the strength to actually verbalize it.
Yes, so relate. Because you are conditioned to be silent. Again, you don't express your feelings, you know? And I think it's a case of thinking that what you have to say is not valid. Even though you know it's valid, but to express it, you're not taught that. So it's like a learning. It's about learning a journey of having to self-love and come into your own. So bearing that in mind, what you've just said, why do you think that some women don't leave their abusers when they ought to?
Well, it's an extremely big step. And although you may be living in an environment that is totally negative and is destroying you, it's what you're familiar with. And you feel that, in a way, better the devil that you know. And there's always that hope that your abuser is going to change, that they're actually going to stop doing what they're doing, and they're going to listen to you. And they're going to take on board how you're feeling. There's always that hope that things are going to change.
Especially when you go through that cycle of apologies and then, you know.
Yes, yeah. And the makeup. Yeah, the makeup afterwards.
Exactly. The great sex.
Yes, yeah. And you hope.
Yes.
You hope it's going to be better.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that keeps you going for a very, very long time, I think. And then it's usually something that actually happens, something else that just tips the balance that makes you think, actually, this is how it's going to be. And this is how it's always going to be.
Yeah. I hear that. So once you've left an abuser, in your experience, do you feel like it's over?
Well, in my experience, yes. When I left, I thought, oh, great, I'm out. Although there is that fear that goes with it, because obviously once you've left, he's now going to be angry and is going to try and find you. So you've got to live with that fear for a while until maybe he gets the message that it is truly over. And for me, like I said, I did feel great. I'm out. But because I didn't really realise about the part that I played in attracting abusers, I attracted another one.
Yes.
And that has been my history, to have to attract an abuser, find my way out of it, to be by myself, because generally I would say, that's it, I'm not having any more relationships. And then I'd meet somebody else who came across as being a decent person, well-liked, not pushy with me at all, in a way, a bit of a savior type character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, of course, once you actually get into the relationship, slowly but surely, things start to change. Mm. And that's when I realized, oh, right, I've got another one.
Yes, yes. When did you ever get to the point that you were the common denominator of all of your relationships, that it's your mindset that is attracting these type of relationships?
I would say that was only after the last relationship that I had, because I've had, say, four abusive relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only at the end of the last one, which was very, very, very traumatic, that I thought, okay, this can't just be coincidence.
There's a pattern.
There's got to be, yes, there's a pattern. There's something going on here. And I need to find out what it is. Because although I wasn't planning on having another relationship, yes, I wanted to know what was going on.
Mm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, yes. It's funny, that question, why don't women leave their abusers? It's an internal question, isn't it? Because
yes,
you're abusing yourself. And until you stop abusing yourself, then you're not going to, you see, you'll continue to attract an abuser. But that's what happens, is you place yourself. So it all begins with that self-love, that self-awareness. What do I actually think about myself? How am I actually loving myself? And that blueprint that's created as a child, that is what you attract. Even though consciously you know that this is not right, but within yourself, this is what I'm used to. This is, you attract who you are. And when you get to grips with that and you become aware of those beliefs and now you've got the power to change it, then you start to attract different. What would you say about that?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's about actually owning it and taking mm-hmm. responsibility for your part. And that's a really tough journey
mm-hmm.
because it's always, to you, it's always about them.
Yeah.
And it is about picking it to pieces and finding out, okay, where did it all really start?
Mm-hmm.
And what was the environment? For me, it's looking back and seeing that actually the environment that I grew up in is where it started.
Yes.
And that put me at risk
mm-hmm.
and I was taken advantage of. So, and repeated negative thought, negative treatment. And as I said, destroyed my self-esteem. So I needed other people to make me feel good about myself.
Mm-hmm.
So because I certainly didn't feel good about myself. I mm-hmm. always needed to have somebody else to do that for me.
Yes.
But actually owning it and actually saying the words, yes, that I actually do need to take responsibility for myself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's hard. That is a hard,
yes,
hard, and a long journey.
Yes. And
to get to that point.
I also have to stop allowing myself to get into these type of relationships. So like you said, taking responsibility and ownership. So that's why I said I no longer looked at myself as a victim. I looked at myself as a victor. So you let go of that victim mindset, which then holds you like a ball and chain to your past. Because your past doesn't mean that that's how your future is going to unfold. You actually have choices there.
Yes, that's right.
Mm.
And I think you often feel that you don't have any choices, or you're so worn down by the experiences that you've had, you don't even see the next one coming until you're actually in it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Again.
So what would you say to those mothers who feel unempowered and they're actually perhaps aware that their children are being abused, whether it's sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse? Do you think that they truly understand how detrimental or traumatic it is for the child witnessing that? Because at the time, I felt like children grow up to be adults. And at some point, you know, they're going to address their parents for, you know, for what happened when they were a child.
Yeah.
What would you say to those parents who are right now perhaps listening to them and thinking, you know, maybe we'll get through this, but not really, you know, taking on board how traumatic it is for the child?
Right. For me, because the reason I left every time was because I knew how I felt as a child in that domestic abuse environment. And I know how it was destroying me. Mm. And I certainly didn't want that for my children. And I think you love your children. You always want better for your children.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Being in an abusive relationship is never going to be better for your children.
Yes.
And they will, and as you've said, they will come to you. I couldn't speak, go to my father because he's passed away.
Yes,
but I did speak to my mother about it. Mm-hmm. And I did ask her why she didn't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, especially back in those days, yes, we're talking 60s,
yes,
it was a totally different, exactly, experience. Mm-hmm. So I understand that.
Yes.
But I just feel that in amongst all the turmoil and the pain that you are going through, just for a second, put yourself in your child's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
They're totally powerless in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to be in that. They don't need to be in that situation. As I said, you know, you want better for your children. So staying in an environment where you know that it's negative, it's hurting you. If it's hurting you, it's hurting your children.
Yes, 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 yes. And, you know, when you really think about the children, and like you said, they're powerless. I remember in my mum's day, she, you know, it was more or less the Windrush days. She just came.
Yeah.
She had absolutely no family here whatsoever. And she, when I speak to her now as an adult, I understand why she did what she did. She did the best that she could at that time. And now there are so many lines that you can call for help.
Yes.
There are places that you can run to for assistance, completely different times. So do you think you could just elaborate on how domestic abuse can be stopped in the home? What can be done in order to alleviate that, to just stop it?
Right. Well, for me, I think you have to speak out. You need to tell somebody. Either there's somebody in your circle, someone at work, and like you've indicated, there are so many organisations that you can either go to or get to online. So I think those are important to do, just so that you know that you're not alone and so that you can actually get some advice. But I think the most important thing that you need to do is you have to tell the police.
Mm.
And it is hard.
Yeah.
I get it. It is really hard. And as if your abuser is a black man, it makes it even harder.
Yes.
Because you know that the outcomes for black men and the police don't often end well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you have to, and that's where you have to put yourself first and not think about him and think about yourself and your children. I mean, it worked for me. I did actually go to the police. And they supported me. I was able to get a non-molestation order and an extension to that order when it was necessary. I had lots of support from the domestic abuse agencies out there. And I had a good circle of friends as well that helped me.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't be silent about it. If it's silent, it carries on, and that's always, that's been the issue. It goes on and it can repeat itself in the next generation because we don't talk about it.
Yes, yes. Because I think, again, in my day, it was seen very much as a taboo subject.
Yeah.
It was something you don't disclose out, you know, you keep your family business, what's going on under the roof. But what you're saying, which I'm in total agreement with, is that you must speak out, or else you're actually empowering the user to continue doing what he or she is doing.
Yeah. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Right. So, you know what? We've come to the end of our time. How I would end it is for anyone who's actually in this situation, talk to a family member, talk to a friend, get someone who you know that will be supportive in helping you in this matter. Even if you go to Google and you put domestic abuse helpline and put your area code, information will come up and how you can get assistance. Think about the children. If you've got children present, think about yourself. It's all about self-love, essentially. You deserve so much more, and so does your child. So, Paulette, thank you so much for taking the time to be like your book cover. Title of your book cover. Say it loud and proud, please. And let us
exposed. Oh, right. It's exposed and unashamed.
Yes. And that's the message that we're going to leave with our listeners this evening. How can they contact you to get your book?
Right. When
is it due out?
It's at the publishers now. It will be out 2 or 3 months, I would say. But I am on LinkedIn. I am on Instagram. So have a look for me there.
Mm-hmm. How do they find you? What is your handle on Instagram?
Oh, right. It's Change Agent. Change Agent A.
Okay. Change Agent A.
On Instagram.
Right. Okay.
Yes. Uh-huh. And on LinkedIn, I am Paulette Grant.
Right. And when is your book due for release? Do you have a release date as yet?
I haven't as yet. Mm-hmm. I haven't as yet, but I will post. I will keep everyone informed about when the release date is. Maybe I can come back onto your show.
Oh, yes, you can. Absolutely. Absolutely. So for my dear listeners, as always, if you want to reach out to myself, it's valerieacampbell.com/apply. Offering free consultations in this area and relationships and dating. So I hope that this has touched somebody out there and that it has added value. So please take this information on board. And Paulette, thank you once again for sharing your information. Really, really appreciate it. Please say goodbye to our guest.
All right. Thank you very much, Valerie, as I said before, for inviting me. And as Valerie has said, I do hope that sharing my story has helped at least one person to think hard about what they need to do next if they're in a similar situation.
Absolutely. So, guys, have a wonderful day. And as always, the divine in me bows to the divine in you. Bye-bye.
Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Stat, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.